My name is Eric from Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
Oh, honey, I just heard some terrible news.
What's that, honey?
The radio station WGXC is going off the air.
Oh, my goodness. Did you know you could donate by check? Give them a check to WGXC 5662 Route 23, Acre, New York, 12405.
And you can also go to their website, wavefarm.org or wgxc.org, and donate monthly, a sustaining supporter.
Oh, I'll be a sustaining supporter, honey, once we get up to that St. Charles Hotel.
Oh, yes, I love the bar there.
There's no bar there.
That's what I meant.
Tune in to a special Christmas Eve broadcast on WGXC 90.7 FM. All day, Monday, December 24th, hear holiday favorites, strange snowy sounds, bells and whistles, parodies, and more unique holiday music. Tune in live at 5 p.m. for a Christmas Eve service broadcast from the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street in Hudson. And at the top of the hour all day, hear reports from the North American Aerospace Defense Command of Santa's journey around the globe. Tune in for round-the-clock holiday coverage on Christmas Eve, Monday, December 24th, on WGXC 90.7 FM. WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Wavefarm's WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Wavefarm Radio Transmit Partner Program.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Acre, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews.
Service Daily Newscast for Monday, December the 24th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Trump administration officials project the government shutdown could go beyond December the 28th. Also on the Monday rundown, Trump resurrects work requirements for SNAP food assistance, plus clean water is but a holiday wish for Eastern Kentucky. Topping our news, Senator Bob Corker accused President Donald Trump of manufacturing a government shutdown to please his core supporters after promising to construct a wall on the southern U.S. border that Mexico would pay for, that from the Huffington Post. Quoting Corker on CNN's State of the Union, "This is a made-up fight so the president can look like he's fighting, but even if he wins, our borders are going to be insecure." The Post adds talks to fully fund the government have broken down amid Trump's demand for $5 billion to begin construction of the wall. It's very possible the shutdown will go beyond the 28th of December and into the new Congress, according to Mick Mulvaney, the director of Office of Management and Budget, that on ABC's This Week. Hunger-fighting groups thought a work requirement for food stamp recipients was dead after it was taken out of the farm bill, but Eric Tegetthoff reports the Trump administration has revived it.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture proposes to undo states' ability to issue waivers on the three-month limit for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, to people who aren't either working or in a training program for 20 hours a week. Susanna Morgan, CEO of Oregon Food Bank, says states with areas with high unemployment have received waivers, and people often don't have jobs because of particular barriers, such as health or transportation issues.
What this is doing is saying, hey, we are going to make it harder for you to continue to get help feeding yourself while you are we're trying to get back into the economy. To me, that is the opposite of what we should be doing.
An estimated 755,000 people nationwide would lose benefits if the USDA rule goes into effect, according to Politico. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue says the goal is to move people towards self-sufficiency at a time when the unemployment rate is at a generational low.
There is a two-month public comment period for that proposal. It starts soon, and you can submit a comment at regulations.gov. Shopping for a Christmas tree this year, you might have noticed they cost a little more in areas like New England. Treegoers say this year's wild weather and climate change played a role.
Some New Hampshire and Vermont tree farms weren't able to harvest their trees because of snow, rain, and mud during the fall, which affected the supply. Jim Hurst, who heads the New Hampshire and Vermont Christmas Tree Association, says the wide range of weather conditions in 2018 has made it difficult. And he's seeing more extreme weather within a year than he used to.
When you look at things on the average, you may not see much of a difference in terms of historical averages. But what we are seeing is significant variations within the year, from very dry conditions to very wet conditions to extreme snow at unusual times of the year, and that has an impact on us.
Beyond New England, he says a late spring frost hurt tree growth in Nova Scotia, so that area exported fewer trees to the Northeast. Also, there are fewer Christmas trees nationally because of a lack of growers a decade ago due to the recession. Since it takes 8 to 10 years for Christmas trees to mature, Hurst says it's having an impact now. I'm Laura Rosbrow-Tellum, reporting.
According to the National Christmas Tree Association, the average price for a tree in 2015 was $51, and last year it was $75. This year it's likely to be a little more than that. And the holiday season brings out the best in most people, but it can also bring out the worst in people looking to defraud folks out of their hard-earned money.
Whether it's in an email, over the internet, or over the telephone, scam artists are taking advantage of people's generosity to the tune of almost $1 billion a year. However, experts say there are ways to protect yourself and your loved ones from becoming victims. Jay Hapala, who handles community engagement for AARP Minnesota, says while scams go on year-round, there seems to be an uptick in them this time of year.
The holiday season just represents a current event or a current relevant hook that con artists use to catch people's attention. So this time of year, it could be shopping. Another time of year, it could be a natural disaster or, say, health insurance enrollment season.
Hapala says there are a number of common sense steps you can take to avoid scams. First, he says, to make sure you don't give out your personal information unless you have verified that the charity, business, or agency wanting the information is legitimate. Mark Richardson reporting.
And finally, Mary Sherman tells us clean water flowing from the tap is still a luxury for many residents of Martin County, who continue to experience the ripple effects of a 2000 coal slurry spill.
Nina McCoy with Martin County Concerned Citizens says the disaster uncovered the water company's deteriorating infrastructure, which has still not been resolved. She says cracked, leaking, aging pipes allow dirty, contaminated groundwater to seep into the system.
People are getting brown water in their homes whenever the pressure goes down. We actually have outages where people are without water sometimes for days or weeks.
Regulators recently approved the Martin County Water District's rate increase, which Mary Cromer with the Appalachian Citizens Law Center contends residents of the economically challenged area cannot bear.
These are people who are living on fixed incomes, sometimes less than $800 a month, who already are buying bottled water because they don't trust the water that comes out of their tap and then are being asked to pay another 25% plus an $8 surcharge.
The Public Service Commission ordered the utility to hire a new management company to take over operations by November 2019. However, Cromer and concerned groups argue that faster change is needed, as well as local, state, and federal assistance to ensure drinking water is clean and affordable.
I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for starting your week newsin' and cruisin' with Public News Service. We are a member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts light snow is likely on Christmas Eve. Less than an inch, though, with a high near 36 and a low around 25, with a few snow showers Monday night. Christmas Day should be mostly sunny with a high near 31 and a low around 24, and Wednesday should be partly sunny with a high near 35 and a low around 20. Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, radio for open ears.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
You've tuned into All Together Now,
WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
5 a.m. Mountain. This is Lieutenant Commander Bill Lewis of the North American Aerospace Defense Command with this hour's Santa Claus flight report. Santa has just been sighted in several cities in New Zealand, including Auckland, Hastings, Wellington, and Christchurch. His north-south track takes him over every nation in the world as he works his way west from the international dateline. For instant updates on Santa's travels, log on to www.noradsanta.org. Happy holidays.
You're listening to WGXC. I'm John Kane. I'm here with Will Yandick, Livingston farmer, Young Farmers Coalition fellow, and purveyor of pies, here to talk about the recently passed by Congress, but not yet signed by President Trump, farm bill for 2018. Welcome, Will.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So can you give us just a little bit of history on what the farm bill is and why it's so important to rural economies?
Sure. The Farm Bill was first passed in 1933. It's an animal of the good old FDR days, where we started many of the large programs that continue to the current day. And it was really a response to the Dust Bowl era, both in terms of providing conservation measures to prevent things like half of a continent's soil from being plowed incorrectly and blowing away, and the wild swings at that time that we saw in crop prices and commodities. So for most of human history, agriculture is largely this subsistence level endeavor. People raise enough to feed their families. There's a few surplus goods to be left over at the end of the season to trade for basic necessities, and everyone moves on with their lives. But after the industrial era, when the global economy started to make agriculture a business, farmers were caught in this trap where when prices were high for a commodity, produced a lot of things, crashed the price. The next year, there was a wild swing up and down. And so the government stepped in to try to create some stability for those price swings for basic commodities like corn and wheat and other agricultural commodities as well. And it's continued to the present day, although largely morphed into a much larger bureaucratic and complicated bill.
Yeah, for those of you who are interested in reading the bill, it is a 640-page bill, and it's looking at, I believe, $867 billion over the next 5 years that the bill is going to be active. That's a pretty big behemoth. Let's talk about Hudson Valley Farms. Farming in general, I believe, has been in recession for the last 5 years.
It depends on who you talk to here in the Hudson Valley. I mean, what we are seeing across the nation, certainly here locally as well, are the mid-sized farms that are really struggling. So, I mean, it may be the best times we've ever had if you're a small farm connected to the tourism business in the Hudson Valley. Maybe you own a brewery or a winery or a small CSA or, you know, a road stand market that's on a busy thoroughfare. Things have probably never been better for you. But if you're a mid-scale farmer, and we really don't have any what we would nationally call large farms in the Hudson Valley, these 20,000-acre corn farms that you see in Iowa, things are tough. It's probably the worst time it has ever been for dairy. I have friends of mine who are saying milk prices per hundredweight are about what their parents got in the 1960s. And it's awfully tough for row crop fruit farmers and other general farmers in the mid-scale at this time.
For dairy farmers, it's particularly bad because they can't store their product, right? They can't wait for prices to change. Cows, you know, you can't diminish the number of cows you have
right
too
I mean,
quickly.
The problem with dairy, I mean, just to give you an example, in 1970, there were probably 650,000 dairies in the United States. Today, there are just north of 40,000, and yet we produce more milk than we've ever produced before. What's happening is just the rapid consolidation of those markets. California, the Midwest. An average dairy in, again, the 1980s was still 80 to 100 cows. Now, nationally, it's not, I mean, an average dairy nationally would be 900 cows today.
Wow.
So even though consumer tastes for milk are declining, there's still storable products like yogurt, which is increasing nationally, cheese, you know, this craze to put protein in absolutely everything from breakfast cereals to lipstick these days is often derived from whey. So the market is there domestically, and we do export a good deal of milk products as well. It's just the big farms are gobbling up the market share, and the national price is too low for small and medium-sized herdsmen to make a go of it just to pay their basic feed costs.
But otherwise, in the Hudson Valley, we're talking about a fairly stable market for small producers.
For small producers. I mean, one of the lucky things is that we're 2 hours north of the largest domestic food market in the country. So if folks can plug into the markets of New York City, then there's a fairly robust market for their products. The challenges here, of course, are also reflected with the national challenges, which is that the average age of farmers are approaching 60, and we don't have a very good transition plan in this country to figure out who the next generations of farmers are going to be.
Now, there was some funding provided in the bill for new farmers. Is that correct?
Yeah. And just to complete your first question, what the heck is the Farm Bill? It is a sprawling piece of legislation that deals everything from direct crop subsidies to rural development to providing credit to farmers, providing insurance safety nets for farmers, providing guidelines for good conservation forestry practices. And really, if you were going to accurately describe the Farm Bill, it should be called the Food Stamp Bill, because 80% of its appropriations are for supplemental nutrition, which is a kind of historic legacy of the past. We previous generations of lawmakers believe that in order to get the nation to pass this big farm bill, there ought to be something in it for towns and cities as well. And that was always the sort of two hands that shook one another. You give us funding for food stamps that helps combat poverty. You know, we provide subsidies that help people in rural areas of the country. What's interesting today is that the vast majority of users of supplemental nutrition are now rural and small town areas rather than metropolitan areas.
So what are some of the issues specifically that the 2018 bill addresses that the previous bill didn't address?
Right. So the 2014 Farm Bill expired, and there has been a contentious battle between the House and Senate for the last year about hammering through the House versions of the Farm Bill. The House wanted to drastically reduce many of the conservation programs in the bill, gut support for things like sustainable and organic initiatives, sideline a lot of the money that was put aside for starting young and beginning farmers, and to provide kind of employment tests for those that were eligible for supplemental nutrition. Very few of those ideas made it into the final version. It was essentially, for those of us on the progressive end of the spectrum, see it as the Senate particularly saving the Farm Bill and preventing from some of the worst cuts and declines in programs that we care about. There are lots of good things that do happen in this new Farm Bill. It doubles funding for conservation measures. It makes permanent small but powerful funding sources to provide farming opportunities for veterans, people of color, young and beginning farmers. And a lot of that was fought for tooth and nail by many advocacy groups, including the National Young Farmers Coalition.
There's also some provisions having to do with the mental health of farmers.
That's right. One of the things that we're finding, I mean, talking about how tough it is for dairy farmers, that we're finding the suicide rate is alarmingly high among rural and struggling farmers. And it doesn't take much imagination to understand that for some of these people, they are working day in, day and night for something that maybe has been passed down for generations from their grandparents. It is their whole identity. And it is so frustrating to get up every day and to work that hard and just to have the economic tide against you. There is provisions in the 2018 Farm Bill to try to provide some help for those folks.
What are some of the things that are missing from the Farm Bill this year? What are some of the things that, you know, maybe a progressive coalition wanted, or maybe the Republicans wanted that didn't make it into the Farm Bill?
Well, one of the things you need to always keep in mind when you talk about the Farm Bill is the proportion of subsidies. essentially 10% of the largest, wealthiest farms receive 75% of the total commodity subsidies and insurance subsidies. We have perverse incentives in the Farm Bill for decades now that reward large farms and encourage them to get better. And so when you talk about small and mid-sized farms getting squeezed out, it's largely because large farms are able to compete at an economy of scale that outcompete those smaller farmers. And we have a farm bill that, instead of directing public funding sources to the small and medium-sized farms that need it, we're funneling it off to the large guys. And that's creating, you know, 10,000-acre farms of soy and corn in the Midwest and providing scraps to nothing for organic, conventional, sustainable fruit, vegetable, nut, dairy and meat producers at the scales that we would be proud of here in the Hudson Valley.
So when we talk about the economies of scale, are we talking about economies of scale simply in soy and wheat? We're not talking about, you know, to my mind, if you are a producer and you can produce, you know, many more apples at scale and provide those apples at a lower price to consumers, that's a good, right?
Sure.
And it doesn't matter to me if you're a big producer or a small producer.
Well, that's the natural market, and that's a fact of life for farming and any other economic proposal. What this farm bill does, unfortunately, is gives an extra burst of juice and direct commodity subsidies for really five big crops.
Let's talk a little bit about one of the newer crops that is, I'm assuming, going to be taking the nation's heartland by storm, and that is hemp. In hemp, generally, and probably cannabis coming down the line.
The 2018 Farm Bill does remove hemp from the Schedule I list of controlled substances. The backstory of how this got on is kind of interesting, and it's somewhat related to Trump's trade war. China imports roughly $24 billion worth of U.S. corn, soy, and other agricultural products. And with the current wranglings around his trade war, that's a big hole to fill. So leaders in the Senate, Mitch McConnell at the top of that list, have been avowed enemies of anything that reeks of marijuana for decades
well
in
put.
The Senate.
That's well put.
And it sounds like he softened his approach on allowing hemp to be a product, a crop that can be grown in the United States to try to plug in some of that hole.
What is the aversion to hemp historically?
I think it's purely cultural. I think it just smells of 1960s hippies, which is ridiculous because hemp is a legitimate agricultural product that has all sorts of applicable uses, from varnishes to paints to animal feeds, rope, fiber. Lego, the company, the toys company Lego, is really looking for a non-petroleum-based alternative, since half of their little Legos are floating in the Pacific Ocean and being eaten by sea turtles and birds.
Oh, that's sad.
So we think hemp might be a crop that could provide an alternative to replace the fossil fuels that we use to make common plastics and toys.
Is the Hudson Valley poised to make any progress there? I know that there are a couple farms in the Hudson Valley that have taken advantage of a hemp pilot program. Is that a crop that could be taking over some farms in the Hudson Valley in the near future?
I think in the short term, it's a great opportunity. Ben Dobson over in Livingston has got one of those limited permits to test. Chuck Schumer came out this summer to come out and promote hemp as a viable commercial crop for Hudson Valley farmers. I think the farmers that are able to be nimble, to raise capital quickly and can get off the ground quickly, will reap immediate and short-term profits. I think long-term, what's likely to happen is that hemp and marijuana will probably be the law of the land in all 50 states. And once that happens, you're on the same race that you are with milk and other commodities, which is that the big guys start to really lock up the market share. So I think in the short term, the next 5 to 10 year horizon, there are real opportunities for small and mid-sized farmers.
Is the Hudson Valley climate appropriate for growing hemp?
My understanding of hemp is that it's actually a pretty forgiving crop, an easier crop to grow than corn. Corn is a pretty heavy feeder, as we say, in the ag business. It requires a lot of fertilizer. It's sensitive to temperature and moisture. Hemp is a pretty easy crop to grow in terms of soil moisture and fertility. So it should have a larger geographic base from which to be grown.
Speaking of hemp, you know, we're also looking at New York possibly legalizing recreational marijuana. Is that something that Hudson Valley farmers are going to be diving into as well en masse, do we think? Is that going to be small producers?
I mean, I was talking to a local businessman here in Hudson who has already raised $100 million with several backers to try to chase it. Certainly the tobacco industry is looking for a new ship to land on. If you go to the U.S. Capitol and walk through the halls of the Senate and look up at the neoclassical columns, there are tobacco leaves, like, you know, motifs carved, literally physically carved into the physical structure of the nation. It was such an important crop. And now they're really the face of demonic face of corporate greed and agriculture. So they're looking to probably rebrand themselves and chase this. The question is whether or not small and mid-scale producers can get a piece of the action. I think, again, they can in the short term. Long term, who knows?
Yeah, artisanal local organic pot seems like
it works for tomatoes.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty easy sell. So this is the Farm Bill is a pretty big, sprawling bill. One of the things that it does cover is economic development in rural areas. Columbia County, I mean, in spite of the fact that it is considered part of the Capital District, is by and large a rural county, as is Greene County and most of the Hudson Valley. How important is the Farm Bill to economic development, and what kind of opportunities do we see in the Farm Bill?
The Farm Bill specifically has a provision that deals with rural development, and it has a huge potential to invest in physical infrastructure such as broadband, to fund research and development. I mean, many of these rural communities have sort of beacons of economic success in a county seat or in a university town, which could benefit from those direct research grants. And that language is encoded specifically into the Farm Bill. Again, that was the old sort of deal and partnership that rural America had with urban America over food stamps. And one of the payoffs in exchange for being the breadbasket of the country is this notion that the Farm Bill will bring the rest of the country to the forefront with all sorts of technological progress. This was the debate of FDR's day with rural electrification. I mean, there were farms here and outside of Hudson that still had their own home generators spinning around trying to keep the lights on in the laundry room 10, 20, even 30 years after the lights were burning brightly in New York City. And the Farm Bill of that era helped close that gap through the 30s and 40s, the rural electrification program. Today, it's really about broadband. I mean, if even farms that hope to market globally, to market regionally, have to get online. Everyone needs to get online to succeed.
Is 5G, I mean, you know, 5G obviously allows a lot more connectivity and equipment and, you know, measuring devices. Is 5G important moving forward for farms?
Well, farms are becoming more technologically advanced in their, you know, the integrated pest management systems that are looking at the data of weather and the number of degrees in a day to tell a farmer when they can or can't spray. Some of the technology that farmers are using to plant seeds, to manage their economic portfolios, to try to figure out when to buy or sell a crop, need to be online. Many of our CSAs, the local retail-oriented farms, have their entire livelihoods linked to their websites and advertising when the right time to come to the farm for a pick-your-own or event are there. I think it's critical that they have the same speed that the rest of the country are to stay competitive.
As the Hudson Valley sort of evolves from being simply a rural community to being part of an urban corridor, you know, whether that's between New York and Montreal or New York and Albany or, you know, however these cities crisscross, is the Farm Bill going to remain just as important a funding mechanism, or are we going to have to move to different sources of funding for a lot of the economic development projects that we're looking at?
Well, there's a lot of other pots of money to fund rural economic development. I think the real central question is whether or not the Farm Bill will ever work for small and mid-sized farmers, and how do we as consumers, as those of us who live in small towns and urban areas who eat 3 square meals a day, insist that it become? How many more generations are we going to dump $40, $50 billion into corn and soy growers that frankly don't need it, many of which are farmers in name only because they're living in some townhouse in St. Louis or Chicago? I mean, are we ever going to ask the Farm Bill to do what it must do, which is to provide sustainable, environmentally sustainable, carbon-friendly, equitable sources of income for rural farmers. Currently, it does not. Mm-hmm. It's getting better. 2018 has made some...
WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
You're listening to Transmission Arts programming on WGXC.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Tune in special holiday programming all day, Monday, December 24th. Seth Rich is in with Timeless Vibes, a holiday edition at 11 a.m. live in Accra, and then Lincoln Mayorga is in with the Monday Musical Matinee live from Hudson's First Presbyterian Church. At 2 p.m., we'll hear Brian DeWan's show this past Saturday night, his annual Christmas show at Hilo in Catskill at 2 p.m. on the air. At 4 p.m., we'll go to Backtracks in Time with Jack Sensabaugh and hear about Christmas's past. 5 p.m., we'll be live from the First Presbyterian Church for their Christmas Eve service at 5 p.m. live on the radio from the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson. And every hour on the hour, hear reports from NORAD about Santa's progress around the world on WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Healthcare Consortium, a rural health network dedicated to improving access to healthcare and supporting the health and well-being of the people in our rural community. Throughout 2018, the Healthcare Consortium will be celebrating 20 years of serving the residents of Columbia and Greene counties. To learn more about the Healthcare Consortium and its services, please visit www.columbiahealthnet.org or call 518-822-8820.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Daniel Zuckerman is reporting for Columbia Green Media. According to an audit by the State Comptroller's Office, the Coxsackie-Athens School District failed to seek competition for professional services during the 2016-17 school year. The report, released December 20th, was based on data dating from July 1st, 2016 to March 27th, 2018. According to state officials, the district did not seek competition for professional service providers such as specialized teachers and therapy and environmental and financial consulting. The report found, and I quote, "Although the services procured were for legitimate and appropriate purposes, district officials and the board lack assurances that these services are not procured in the most economical way, in the best interest of taxpayers and without favoritism," end quote. Also, the district did not require written documentation for purchases from a total of 15 public works contract vendors, totaling nearly $119,000, according to the report. Coxsackie-Athens Superintendent Randall Squire said the findings of the audit were fair and district staff will comply with the suggestions the comptroller's office made. Squire said, and I quote, "We utilize their suggestions to make improvements in our business office. All of those practices and improvements are in place at this point," end quote. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Mallory Monet is reporting for the Times Union. New York is expanding its legal defense project for immigrants. The First in the Nation program will now include social and health care services for families and rapid response to raids by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. The expansion was announced by Governor Andrew Cuomo December 20th.
Cuomo said, and I quote, "These expanded services will help immigrants who are unfairly targeted by ICE get the legal assistance they need and provide health care services to undocumented children and families who have been neglected by the federal government," end quote. The new Project Golden Door will provide comprehensive family support services at 12 existing sites, including Albany. Read the full story in the Times Union. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting a new report by the State Department of Environmental Conservation shows that General Electric's cleanup of PCB contamination in the Upper Hudson River is incomplete and not protective of public health and the environment. The state is calling on the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency not to issue a certificate of completion to GE, which would end the company's responsibility for cleaning up the Superfund site. PCB levels in fish are currently above EPA's own acceptable risk range. DEC is also calling on the EPA to direct GE to collect additional data to determine if another round of sediment remediation is needed. DEC Commissioner Basil Sagos said the state is prepared to use all available legal options to ensure the job is finished. He said, and I quote, "Under no circumstances," end quote, should the EPA issue a certificate of completion to GE. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com. Patricia Doxey is reporting for the Daily Freeman. Beginning January 1st, it will be illegal for Ulster County businesses to sell tobacco products to anyone under the age of 21. County lawmakers voted unanimously in May to raise the minimum age to purchase tobacco products from 18 to 21. Ulster County Executive Michael Hines signed the measure in June. He said the change will help deter young people from beginning to smoke and improve the overall health of Ulster County residents. The law makes Ulster one of the more than a dozen localities statewide, including Orange, Rockland, Sullivan, and Albany counties, that have raised the minimum age for tobacco purchases, according to the Preventing Tobacco Addiction Foundation. And you can read that full story in the Daily Freeman. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Graham. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts light snow is likely on Christmas Eve. Less than an inch, though, with a high near 36 and a low around 25, with a few snow showers Monday night. Christmas Day should be mostly sunny with a high near 31 and a low around 24, and Wednesday should be partly sunny with a high near 35 and a low around 20. Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, radio for open ears.
Oh, guess who it is?
Amanda.
Daisy Lees. Come on in, Amanda. Come on in. Hi. Hi.
Hello. Hello.
Move that person. Have a seat. All put right. Your headphones on.
I want to give you guys fair warning.
What?
I am getting over a cold.
Oh, that's all right.
So my nose is all pink and I sound a little stuffy.
And the funny thing is, no one can see it on the radio.
Isn't that
amazing?
They can hear it.
I know, right? Oh, they can hear the stuffiness.
They can hear the stuffiness.
Wow, since we last saw you, your hair has grown quite long.
It's long now.
Oh,
hi,
go.
Hi. It's so nice to meet
you. And you look so collegiate today.
Oh, yeah, look at that. A tennis sweater. A red, white, and blue tennis sweater.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Another.
What's this?
Be careful. Tom's trying to open the door by pushing a button, and he's leaning way back in his car, and I'm in his chair, and I'm afraid he'll fall over.
I know. It is a bustling station.
Man, oh.
Who could that be for?
Oh, my goodness.
It says... Miss Ellen Thurston.
Oh, no. Oh, folks, just now in the station, someone's dropped off a bouquet of flowers with a small balloon and a small envelope and a mysterious box underneath the bouquet. This is so thrilling.
What does it say, Ellen?
Delivery date, December 20th.
That's today.
Order 1001760.
Talking to the mic so people can share your joy with you. With you.
It's hard to do because it's so... This is a huge box of flowers. Huge.
They're gorgeous.
Hello, you're on the air.
Who's this?
This is an important message. Do not hang up the phone. Your Google business listing is at risk of displaying incorrectly. We've tried...
What the heck was that? That's funny.
It is funny. It's from everyone that loves you.
Oh.
How nice.
Oh.
Isn't that sweet?
Thanks, everyone.
I hope that's
so nice.
Go ahead, cry in the air.
No. No, what is it? I'm not going to cry.
Happy birthday, Ellen.
Ellen, when was your birthday?
You. Yesterday.
Oh, my goodness. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Who could have thought a thing like that?
Yeah.
Gee.
Tom, I bet it was you.
No. I like the little balloon. It says happy birthday.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I wonder what's in that box.
I won't tell you about the balloon I got at home. I won't tell you about the balloon.
And you know what, Ellen? I'm not even mad that you didn't invite me to your little soiree last night.
Oh.
She had a soiree without me.
Oh.
A birthday soiree.
The flowers I have at home look a lot like these.
You think maybe they come from the same place?
They may.
Well, get a little of that crunchy noise on the air.
Yeah.
That
sounds yeah.
Oh, I can't Ellen's... do both at once.
Yeah, I know.
The flowers are surrounded by cellophane to protect them from the weather, I suspect.
Huh?
How nice. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
Quite
a variety.
I wish I weren't going away. I'm going away for like...
What? What?
I'm going away for Christmas.
Oh, that's...
Oh, where are you going to go for Christmas?
To upstate New York.
Ooh.
And I thought we were upstate here.
This is farther upstate.
Are you going to Buffalo?
No, not.
I wouldn't dare go to Buffalo.
She goes near Binghamton.
Okay, nice.
It's actually more kind of horizontal to here than...
It's west of here.
West of here as well. Yeah.
All right.
Horizontal. What the hell
south
am I
of here?
Southwest.
I guess the southwest. Yeah.
In any case... I have a message here. It says, the phone situation is crazy. Anyway,
what's going on with the phones?
We've had a lot of calls.
I know. I've been listening
really cool.
in and
you
out.
Know, we haven't even told people why Amanda Daisy-Lees is here.
Oh, no worries.
And that's the most important thing. You can be a part of the show all the time if you wanted. But you're here because at the New Year's Eve party, as I promised to tell our guests, our listeners, you will be the karaoke host.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
Do you prefer the non-gender?
Yeah, host is great with me, but honestly, I'm not offended either way.
Okay.
Anything works
for me.
So,
Ellen, you
can
still call her a hostess if you want.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. It says here, you are a karaoke expert.
Oh, that's even better. Forget.
Oh, and what are you reading there?
Something I wrote.
I like that, too. I know people keep asking me if I have a title
for a degree in karaoke.
Yes, I know. Oh,
hey, Ellen, these days at the schools, these days,
I know
they probably give a degree.
It would have been cool.
Basket weaving and karaoke.
Yeah, honestly, that's really spot on what I do. I do a lot of weaving and hosting karaoke.
Well, there you go. Who's making fun of it? It's a beautiful life.
You were on the program here with Tom and me. Say a year ago.
Yeah.
At that time, I came away with thinking, this is a woman who makes people comfortable with karaoke.
Uh-huh.
She can persuade them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's in the wrong key, I don't know, can you change the key on a song?
No, I can't change the key, unfortunately. And I do my best to find
what fits. It's a personal obsession of Ellen's, you know.
I know. Well, I think a lot of people who have a real good musical ear or are musicians.
Well, you know,
sometimes
Ellen was
a tough time.
Ellen was a cabaret pro in her day. You
but
know.
If you can't reach the note, I mean, it's pretty
Ellen,
dismal.
I think you don't really understand the aesthetic of karaoke.
Well,
there's quite a bit to be gotten from listening to people screw up.
It's therapeutic.
Tell me about that. Tell me more about that.
Well, you know, if you're a wonderful singer.
I can screw up as much as anybody else.
Yeah, but it's different because you have a professional standard.
I'm sure you'd be, if you're
mistakes,
a fantastic singer and you can,
she is.
She's
sung at the Red Bank.
Perform it, you know, close to perfect, whatever that is, like the original recording artist, then that's great and that's a joy to watch, but it is really therapeutic to just
Oh, it's therapeutic.
Give it a go and just see how it comes out either way, you know.
And there's a I understand there's a screen and there the lyrics go across the screen.
Yeah.
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 So you don't forget the lyrics.
The last time I sang in public, mm-hmm. I forgot the lyrics on two songs.
Oh, my God.
It's easy to forget or mix up a chorus or a verse, you know, swap a
did
verse.
You, what did you do? Did you leave the stage in
the
horror?
Pianist.
The what?
The pianist. The accompanist.
I'm a child. You know that. Go ahead.
You got me, too. You got me, too. It's just because I'm a little sick, too.
The pianist said sort of, it didn't whisper, but said a word that was the next verse. And you're right. It was a series of, it was verse after verse of a song that, where the last line was always the same.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the hardest to learn in a way, because it's easy to repeat verses when you shouldn't.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Now, Amanda, I know you are the expert, the host, but do you do it yourself each time?
I have had co-hosts in the past, mm-hmm. and I enjoy having them. I don't know if you remember, so the last time I was on your show
mm-hmm.
Was to promote the WGXC karaoke fundraiser.
How did that do?
The karaoke, if you remember fun. It was great. I think it did really well.
Good.
I had a really great time, and I had a co-host for that.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I think there's going to be a large volume, mm-hmm. you know, for an audience, a lot of people,
right.
I usually have a co-host because it's you know, it can be tough to...
It's real management. You got to
run back and forth.
You got to get the hook out for the people you want to get off the stage and move the next person in. You got to set up the songs.
Announcing the next person and then running back to my computer where the whole program is.
I see.
Dialing it up. So it can be tough. And
computers. Mm. There's computers involved.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you use for a hook?
Oh, I guess I just kind of slowly creep up stage. You know, they see me coming.
And they know it's over.
And they know it's done.
Do you let people...
You know what's kind of easy to use for a hook?
What's that?
It's kind of mean, I suppose. An umbrella that has a
perfect
hook handle.
Perfect.
You could sneak up behind
it. Ellen.
Yeah, and just...
Ellen, that's so cool.
Right at the ankles.
I'm shocked that you would come up with something like that. Are some people allowed to go for more than one song?
Oh, of course.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I like to, you know, you can't go one right after the other. You got to mix it up and give everyone a chance. But you can go more than once in a night for sure.
Wow.
Has Tom performed for you, karaoke?
Tom has never come and performed.
Alan thought she was going to catch me in that and find out that I have, but I have not.
No.
Can you explain?
I don't drink
why
anymore. That's why.
Well, you don't need to drink.
Oh, I do.
I'll get you up there.
Aside from that, what reason can you tell us
for not doing it?
Yeah,
that's the only reason.
Oh, that's the only reason.
You can't. I'm not going to make a fool of myself without being drunk.
Well, that's the whole point, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah,
but, you know, I have pride.
We
can't
do
you tell
it.
From
we
this
do
show?
It every day. You just got to do it on stage.
I would do it here. You know, I do it here all the time, basically. I sing all the time, and it's horrible.
There's not a barroom.
No one can see me.
I've never heard you sing, except today when you were in the studio with Brian DeWine.
Oh, yeah. See? I just break out into song all the time.
That
you don't know me.
Impression.
Oh, nice. That's a really good choice.
I just don't know the lyrics. See, but the lyrics right in front
They're
of
on
me,
the screen.
Right?
Yeah. But I do try to make it comfortable and easy for people to come up.
And you do a couple yourself, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I started off.
Do you have like a set group that you like to do, or do you just wing it? You go for something new every time?
Oh, I try to mix it up and do something new, because that's the whole point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Gotta do something that scares you a little bit. But because I am just really, I just do the first song mostly, or always do the first song and the last song just to kind of set it up. But I usually end up doing the same things. I'm ashamed to admit, mm-hmm. though there is no shame in doing mm-hmm. the same thing every time.
And what are some of those tunes?
I really like doing the Cher version of Walking in Memphis.
Oh.
I really love that song.
The guy
song.
Who wrote it sounds horrible.
I don't know who wrote it.
He played here recently, and so I looked up.
Oh, whoa.
So I
hope he doesn't hear this.
So I said,
we take it back.
No, I'm not going to take it back. I mean,
WGXC has no responsibility. So,
hold on, ladies. So I go to the internet, you know, the web, whatever, and I put in his name, and here it says Walking in Memphis. He's seen it. Well, first of all, he has hair. The video, he still had hair.
Yeah.
Now he's like gray with no hair. And I don't know. I just didn't
gray
like,
with, like, gray with no
you know,
hair?
Bald on top. You know what I mean. Oh, thirsty. Control yourself. He's bald on top with gray hair. And I heard him sing the song, and I didn't like it.
Yeah. No, the Cher version is the one that does it for me. And there's
you
a
see all
others.
These like famous people and everything, right? I'm walking in Memphis. I see someone.
Yeah. That's, the Ghost of Elvis.
Yeah, that song.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Okay, check out the guy who wrote it online. You'll see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I feel
about.
Like I've heard it, and it didn't.
I don't know his
you
name.
Know, it
and
didn't,
I'm sorry if he's
didn't
listening.
Grab me.
He's actually probably a very nice human being, and he plays at Helsinki.
Hey, he could be a jerk. You don't know.
Well, he's probably made a lot of money off that song.
Yeah.
If, I didn't know Cher. She made it into a hit.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it became like a hit like her other hits, but. Yeah. She recorded it, and it's lovely. I love singing that one.
Cool.
What else?
Any ABBA songs?
No. I've never sang any ABBA. Yeah. Though someone recently said, hey, Amanda, I heard another song with your name in it the other day. There was something in the air last night. The stars were bright. Amanda. And I'm like, no, that's...
It's Hernando.
It's Fernando.
Fernando. Like,
that's really sweet, but that's not me.
Yeah, you can change it. I mean, you're not obligated to say the exact lyrics on the screen, right?
No, of course not. You can mix it up.
How Fernando. Did you happen to get into this karaoke business?
Oh, well...
It was a tough thing, right? I mean, you had to pass a lot of tests.
Yeah, exactly. I went away to a school in the remote mountains for learning the karaoke wisdom.
Ah.
I started when I was 19, I think, in college.
Good age to start.
Because I wanted to hang out in a bar.
There's a problem. There's a problem with that. You were 19. How did you hang out in the bar?
Well, I hosted karaoke for everyone who was of age. Of course, I didn't touch a drop of the stuff. But it started for a very different reason than why I continue it now. But yeah, I started it then, and I really love it. I love providing that outlet to people.
Pleasure. Are there many karaoke comfort. Hosts in the USA?
Oh, gosh. I think there's hundreds and millions.
Really?
Yeah.
Who do you think has more talent, a DJ or a karaoke host?
Oh, a DJ.
Nah, not in my opinion. It's a lot more to... it's like wrestling cats. You know, you got all these people you got to deal with. A DJ has nobody they have to deal with.
Oh, my gosh. They've got... I'd say just
the dancers,
as many.
The dancers out
there.
But they're in total control.
Yeah, you imagine how many people come up and are like, hey, can you play my song?
Oh, really?
Yeah. That actually happens to me. People think I'm a DJ all the time because the performers are so good.
Right.
They're like, I want to perform next my song. I'm like, I'm sorry, that's for open mic. This is karaoke.
Oh, do they do an open mic there?
No, they don't.
They don't, which, you know, it would be great to have more of that, but...
Ellen's just wanted to get in there, that's all. But you could do karaoke, because you sing well-known songs. I'm sure they're in the...
I'll let you sing whatever you want.
I don't sing well-known songs. That's the whole point.
But we have some
details.
Name a
song. I can't sing it.
Stormy Monday.
No, I don't know that.
I don't know that song either.
I don't know. You got me on the spot.
You can sing whatever you want. You guys are both VIP.
One of those Blossom Deary songs you love so much.
Oh, yeah, that we sang that grape. Last time.
Yeah, what?
Peel me a grape.
Go ahead, start.
That's I don't know the lyrics. Okay. I have trouble with lyrics, obviously.
You know what? I'll see if we have that. There's a good chance we might. Oh, but either way, we'll just...
Don't do it for
me. I've heard a rumor, Amanda Daisy Lees.
Yeah.
And I know this rumor because... your man was at my house for Thanksgiving.
Oh, he says hi, by the way. I just saw him.
Hi back to him. You were in Mexico. Is that true?
I'm about to go. I'm going tomorrow.
Oh, you weren't in there for Thanksgiving?
No. Oh, I saw my brothers for Thanksgiving.
Okay, that's what it was.
I confused
the two stories. Now you're going to Mexico.
Yeah, I'm going tomorrow.
Your parents are in Mexico.
Yes, yeah. And they can actually hear WGXC all the way in Mexico by going online to WGXC.org.
Hey, let's hire the girl.
And you can listen live.
I mean, unbelievable, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
She knows how to promote things. Karaoke, WGXC.
Hey, I'm doing my best. I'm sorry.
You are doing your best, and your best is the best.
I'm not tip top today.
But you're doing fine.
I'm flying tomorrow.
Oh, you're flying tomorrow. Mm-hmm, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. But you'll be back in time for January.
Oh, yeah.
December 31st at the New Year's Eve party at the Half Moon Front Street.
Yeah.
You will be.
All right, let's get some info, huh?
Excuse me. Now I'm catching your cold. No,
small room.
It starts at 8 o'clock with the karaoke.
It does, and goes to 10.
That goes to 10. And then the band Blueberry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really
high energy, funky, old school dance band.
I'm not really liking that name though. Blueberry.
Well, I think it's nice.
Okay. If you think so, it is.
I don't know who could be listening.
Yeah. Oh, you mean like somebody in Blueberry?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, Blueberry. I think that's a great name.
I think it's a nice name.
You remember the strawberry alarm clock?
Yes, I do.
There you go. So
incense and peppermints.
Incense and peppermints. Good time. Who cares what games we choose? A little to win and nothing to lose.
Oh, I forgot it. I didn't bring the hook.
6 a.m. Mountain. This is Lieutenant Commander Bill Lewis of the North American Aerospace Defense Command with this hour's Santa Claus flight report. Santa completed his deliveries in northeastern Russia and is currently in Japan in the Pacific Ocean. After that, we expect him to head towards Guam, Micronesia, Papua New Guinea on his way to Australia. Santa has carefully planned tonight's flight to take full advantage of the Earth's time zones as he heads west. For instant updates on Santa's travel, log on to www.noradsanta.org.
Nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur, or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Echo. You are listening to WJFC Acra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
I'm a rogue.